you've lived an astonishing life. I was speaking to you just the other day in absolute awe of all of the things that you've done. Are there any particular highlights that stand out in your colourful journey?
Well, I've been lucky. I was born 80 years ago at DY on the Sydney's northern beaches, and at that time it was all bush. There was the beautiful lagoon with black swans who don't go there anymore, and the little grebes, and used to play in the reeds and on the surf and the sand hills, and look at Longreef from our house right up on DY Head. I'm not Indigenous, but I hold out that I had a bit of an Aboriginal childhood till perhaps the nuns got hold of me at a certain age. Then I became a copy boy at the age of 16 when I left school, and then later a journalist, and that was in London and with the Australian troops in Vietnam. As a copy boy, I carried copy for people like the poet Ken Slesser, and strangely enough, Isidore Brodsky. Isidore Brodsky was a special writer on the Sydney Sun, where I was in 1956, and he wrote the first biography of Bennelong, a rather kind of paternal one, because of that period, probably. And it's strange that I used to carry copy for him, and then many years later, in 2001, I did a biography which I hope helps to sort of rebuild the character of Willawarrawarri Bennelong, the Sydney Aboriginal man who was a go-between with Captain Arthur Phillip.
One part of your life that, sorry, I'm just trying to collect all my thoughts, because you've gone from journalist in London and in Vietnam, and then you've come back to Australia, and you founded a really well-known publication called Earth Garden.
Well, talk about that real quick. In 1972, Irene, my wife, and I founded Earth Garden because we just had the opportunity to do it. We were actually in Melbourne at the time and going around in a camper van. The plan was to go right around Australia, but we stopped there and did the first edition of that magazine on a friend's kitchen table. And that was promoting all sorts of things like organic gardening, solar energy, mud bricks. Depended probably many issues on what I was interested in at the time. Even solar electricity. I wrote the first book about alternative energy in the 70s. I got that bug from travel. I think travel was my education. For example, I was at a kibbutz for 6 months in Israel, picking fruit for Jaffa, avocados, learning things, and I suddenly had one of those gee whiz moments. Gee, you can grow your own food, which might seem simple to some people, but it was a breakthrough for me. And when we came back, we were a kind of go-between people who were going back to the earth and building their houses and growing their gardens, and we would put it into print. And then we did that for 12 years before we sold the magazine.
Wow. What was your favourite part about putting that magazine together?
Just working together, because we had that kind of relationship, the two of us, where we could write the stories together, sitting next to each other on a pew, which I have here, from an old church, which is still in front of me.
Oh, wow.
And then our daughter came along, and we had some more of that travel. One of the things, before she was five, we took a camper van from London, went to Morocco until the sand went up to the wheels, and came back again, then went through Europe back to London. And that was a marvellous event for our daughter Melissa, also educational perhaps for all three of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a place in the world that you've visited that has really, you know, stolen your heart, captured your heart?
Well, there's a few. I hesitate to mention the name Timbuktu. in Mali, and I went across the Sahara with a group of Aussies in 1983, and 7 weeks in at Marrakesh, and then out at Abidjan and the Ivory Coast. And it's an incredible experience in my life, going mostly for Algeria, meeting the Tuareg right in the middle of the Hoggar Mountains. That's right in the middle of the Sahara. Mm. So that was a great feeling. And after that, when we sold our magazine, we were at a loose end, and I started to write a book, a self-published book called Sydney City, and which turned out to be a kind of historical travel book. Mm. And in that, I came across the characters of Bennelong, of Bungaree, and of Pimmelwee. And I've written books about Bennelong and Bungaree. Bungaree is just that incredible character who, flamboyant he was in his later life, but in his earlier life, an adventurous young man, and he's the first Australian Brennan, who's an Aboriginal man from Broken Bay, to circumnavigate Australia when he sailed with Matthew Flinders in 1802 for air.
Wow. What do you think it is that sparked your really strong, because you have quite a strong passion for Indigenous history?
I do, and it's hard to focus on except for that earlier experience in my life when I ran around the bush at Dewa and around the beach and the surf, and I felt right at home. But it's people that I was interested in, and whereas many people have written books about what happened, I zero in on the people. And also, I had the opportunity, again through my daughter Melissa, to go to university at quite a mature age, which was 53, and ended up staying 15 years at Macquarie University doing my BA, MA, and PhD, and I managed to do it all in Indigenous studies.
Wow.
A bit of anthropology, so that was incredible. And since then, I've done exhibitions at the Mitchell Library. One was Eora with my friend Ace Burke in 2016. And then Murray Nowy, reading the lives of the Sydney people, I suddenly discovered that many of them had gone to sea in English ships. I had about 60, and that Murray Nowy means big canoe. Murray is big, and Nowy is the stringy bark canoe of the Sydney area that people fished in, or fished from. and that excited me. Then I wrote the book Murray Nowy also, which I would say now I've got something like 120 Indigenous men and a couple of women who went to sea in English sailing ships, and they went to amazing places. I've been along, and his friend Yamara Warani, for instance, went to London in 1792 in November. But while they were there in 1793, his brother-in-law, Nunganunga Murray Murgan, who the English called Collins, he went to Nootka Sound, that's these days Vancouver, and he went down all the California coast, which even then was just Spanish missions.
Wow.
And he went to Hawaii. The King Kamehameha wanted to buy him, but he would prefer to come back to Sydney. So I can imagine what it must have been like when Bennelong and his brother-in-law, Nunga Nunga, got together and had a little chat. Bennelong had been to the Tower of London, which was a zoo. He'd seen lions and tigers and bears and elephants. And Nunga Nunga would have seen, first of all, he would have seen surfing in Hawaii, because the captain of the ship he was on, the Daedalus, said he goes with the boys, the local Polynesians, and does what they do. Well, what they did was surf. He's probably the first Australian to have witnessed surfing.
Wow. Dr. Keith, I could honestly talk to you for hours and hours, but unfortunately we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, sharing a bit about your life.
Thank you very much indeed, Jess.